I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
UK Tech Weekly Podcast.
Yes, it's the World Cup, and depending on your tastes, either a reason to bunk off work or a reason to clock up some overtime. Pubs become horrible testosterone cages, TV schedules jostle with Love Island, and England... Oh wait, England won its first match. Anyway, we're diving headfirst into the controversial world of tech in sport this week, starting with the inclusion of the VAR system at the World Cup, but also older examples of the Hawkeye technology in cricket and tennis. Now, is this tech for the betterment of sport, or does it kill some magic slash human error that other games keep intact? Speaking of human error, perhaps the sport with the least room for any of that is Formula One, where a lapse in concentration can very much result in death. Perhaps the most tech-infused sport in the world. We'll dive into how tech is helping and hindering Lewis Hamilton and co. Anyway, joining me today to discuss all of this and more is Christina Mercer.
Hello.
Cool, Sean Bradley.
Hi.
And David Price.
Hello.
Kick off. Sean, you're English, so you love football. That got that out of the way. VAR, what is it?
VAR. So this year at the World Cup, it's the first major international tournament where VAR, which is a video assistant referee, has made an appearance. So football fans may be familiar with this, as it was trialled at the FA Cup and at various points throughout the English season, much to the dismay of some, because there's a lot of people feeling it's taking away some of the magic around the game, if the referee can call on
bad magic.
The bad magic.
There's no magic in football.
No.
Come now.
thanks for showing up, David.
David, the phrase is magic of the cup.
That is true. Yes.
So you are proven wrong.
Yeah. So
why is it bad? What does it take away?
I think that when it was originally introduced, it was being overused. So the idea that a ref would just, no matter what the decision, he would ask the people in the room if he made the right call, and it was slowing down play and all sorts of other things. But I mean, I feel like if that's the price you pay for getting a decision right, then perhaps...
Something similar happened when in cricket, actually. I don't want to jump ahead too quickly.
No,
but when they first brought in the idea of TV reviews, then they just stopped bothering to interpret any runouts.
Mm-hmm.
And they would, every single runout, even
right.
if the guy was like
okay.
a yard out, they would still go to the TV just to make sure, you know.
The general complaint and... hypocrisy of the modern football fan is that they will hate when a decision goes their way, which then action replays, which are just sort of replays that are sometimes played on telly, but most of the times now inside the stadiums, will prove a refereeing decision wrong.
Yeah.
But then with VAR, the idea is that you might as well use that technology to check.
Yeah.
It's being used anyway, isn't it?
It is, yeah. So to quickly explain what exactly it is, so... as the World Cup in Russia currently, so we have four referees who are sitting in a room somewhere. I like to imagine it as some sort of bunker situation.
It's in Moscow, and I love that they have to wear the referee kit.
Yeah, they have to wear the... Yeah, so there's four,
I really hope they're wearing shorts,
yeah.
But I don't know.
Four of them sitting there, all kitted up.
Full kit.
And they have access to 33 different cameras in a stadium.
Cool.
Including two dedicated offside cameras. So which they can all... also, all four of them directly have control of these 33 cameras, so they should be able to see... every conceivable angle that they could
ever
wish
for. They can
move
them around and stuff.
As far as I'm aware, they have access to... Mm. They've got a huge, giant bank of TVs, and they can all have a look. So the inclusion of VR into the World Cup means that it can only be used in four match-changing, quote-unquote, situations. So that's around goals, penalty decisions, red cards, and cases of mistaken identity. Sounds a bit weird. So if anyone's dressed up like Gaucho Marx, then we'll know. But so that's where I think there's a famous sort of English game where someone was booked three times
Yeah, that's happened. Wrong players have been sent off before.
Yeah, yeah. So it's that sort of stuff. Again, wasn't well liked in England when it came in. So the ref on the field has the final decision always, but he can be advised by the four gentlemen sitting in the bunker who, you know...
It's not a bunker.
definitely a bunker. It's Moscow. And if you can see if he's receiving information, as the ref will point to his ear in the middle of a decision, that means he's getting intel from the room. If the four officials in the room are reviewing the footage of a decision, he'll draw a big square with his hands, which you will be clearly seen on the screen.
Yeah.
Do we get to hear what they're saying to him?
So this is it. So in the Rugby World Cup, you can. So when you can hear the ref talking to the people in the room, and currently you can't in the football.
Well, in rugby, there's a ref mic, but in football they don't do it because there's so much foul language.
Yeah. Well, in rugby, only the captain's allowed to speak to the ref, isn't
That's
it?
Also
yeah.
usually observed, yeah.
Come,
yeah.
sir.
Yeah. It has been used at this World Cup. I wrote down.
Did it make
the first VAR use of the World Cup. Unless I'm taking away some of your thunder here.
No, steal away.
He does do that.
No, I did not. I checked first. France were awarded a penalty against Australia.
Yep.
That was the first use of the World Cup. The first use in English football... Nope, sweet. Was Kelechi Iheanacho of Leicester City.
Mm.
Was wrongly flagged offside for the second goal against his team's third FA Cup round replay against Fleetwood. And he scored. And then... John Moss did the whole box thing. Everyone got all excited, and it wasn't offside. So,
what's the thing that the thing that is most mistaken is that the offside is that offside?
Probably in a game, yeah.
Because is really infuriating. So I think that,
particularly in this instance, yes, like, but when it affects goals as well.
Yeah,
like he scored, and they were like, "Nah, it's offside." You wouldn't do VAR for an offside call, right?
Well, apparently they can because part of the issue is that some decisions can be. Interpreted
right.
and sort of the idea of having the being on the pitch and seeing it right there, you can maybe see, without getting too sort of philosophical, maybe you can see intent or if it really was a mistake, but offside is very much was or wasn't situation. It's you either are offside or you're not. There's no debate about whether it happened, and it's the same if the ball goes over the goal line. So here the refs in the bunker they can make that call and inform the decision, turn it over. Similarly, it's also happened with red cards. So if the ref on the pitch issues a red card, he can be advised if it's overly harsh by the four referees, and it can be actually be taken back.
During the course of the match or post-match?
During the course of the match.
Right, because we've not seen that yet.
No, and the other thing that will get English fans quite riled up is in the Tunisia match when Mr. Kane was essentially rugby tackled in the penalty box by a Tunisian defender, which wasn't seen, because what can happen actually is... if the VAR catches an off-ball foul, they can tell the ref about it. So the ref on the pitch doesn't actually have to see it. He can be advised by the people in the room with the 33 cameras that something bad has happened off the ball, and then cards can be given sort of retroactively.
Yeah.
That didn't happen in the England game when there was a pretty horrendous foul on Harry Kane as he was literally dragged down in the box by a guy who wasn't even looking at the ball. So apparently the 33 cameras didn't catch that one. Anyway.
What do the referees think of this then? Because surely it would... I mean, the classic thing is if they make a terrible decision, they go like, hate mail.
Yes.
Stuff like, all these things. Surely they're for it, aren't they? If they're like, means it takes a bit of heat off them for making a bad decision.
They seem pretty like ready to use the technology.
Yeah. If I was them, I would be up for it, I think.
Maybe the only thing that they won't like secretly is that their decisions can be overruled.
Yes.
That's true. And I guess there is a bit of learning as well.
But then if that stops them making the wrong decision.
If the referee's been told in his ear, you want to have a look at that, can he overrule that and just say no?
Yeah,
he can. Yeah,
he gets the final say.
Yeah, final say is always with the ref on the pitch, which is useful.
But the interesting thing then is that the review is always called for by the referee himself.
I think that...
Or the other referees sort of tell him, we think you got it wrong. But the players never get involved in that.
No.
Because that's interesting.
Because that's unlike...
That's unlike cricket.
Cricket and tennis. Yeah.
And tennis, where the players...
Can challenge it.
What I really like about those systems is that players, up until the point of technology being introduced, were full of it. They were like, oh, you got it wrong. And then you go, all right, are you going to risk a review then? Let's see, put your money where your mouth is. And it's really nice. It uses that expertise, like the batsman in cricket knows whether he's hit or whatever. Use that knowledge. Force him to use a review if he thinks he's not out. But when that was introduced, people said that it undermined the... the umpire in cricket. I don't know what they call him in other sports.
He's the umpire in tennis.
Yeah, and a referee in football.
Yes, you do know.
So they, well done. I guess I did. Is that it actively encourages them to say to the umpire, I don't think you got that right. Can you look again?
Yeah, John McEnroe would not have had a good time with Hawkeye.
No.
Well, it would have been interesting, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
It would have been interesting. But in this case, the footballers, they just, I don't know, it's just, I guess, more accurate decisions are being made.
Yeah, it does put
good,
them in their place a little bit.
Yeah.
And like decisions have genuinely gone against England in the past. I mean, obviously, there's obvious stuff like hand of God.
Yeah.
But then also Frank Lampard's going against Germany in the World Cup,
yes,
which clearly was like 2 feet over the line.
Yeah.
And the whole stadium gets shown the replay, but there's no rule that allows the referee to overturn it.
Yeah, and that's why it's, I think, at the end of the day, that's why it's good that this has come in. Because when Frank Lampard's goal, I was actually going to bring up, because he had his own opinions on, when they put it to the pundits, that he said that, you know, it might be good or bad in certain situations, but there are definitely times when the ball, again, Germany 2010, Frank Lampard's goal, there was daylight between the ball and the line, so far over the line, replay got showed in the stadium, so the entire stadium, everyone could see it, but it didn't stand. I mean, that's nuts. How can you take that seriously, that if we're going to, you know, let that sort of thing stand?
There's some people would argue, purists who get annoyed with technology in football, that the sort of human error is all part of the game. They don't like that. I'm not falling on one side here, by the way. I'm just sort of playing devil's advocate. They don't like that sort of the speed of the game is taken away, because sometimes these decisions can like be used to stall and they take several minutes to come through, and players like don't know what's going on. But in that situation, they would also maybe say that that's why replay shouldn't get played in the stadium.
Right.
But it's interesting that this has now been brought into a World Cup, because you imagine it will soon just go into the major leagues as well.
Yeah.
But it's good because it's not just, like you say, it's just on like defining moments within the game, isn't it? It's not just for like general stuff, like normal fouls and stuff. So I guess it's not being used for everything, so it shouldn't really slow down loads.
No, that's true.
Mm.
In the Colombia-Japan game that's currently on as we record, they didn't use VAR yet. But oh no, wait, did they? So probably not. Do you still call it VAR as the general thing when Hawkeye is used in football? That's still all part of the video assistant ref.
That's a good question.
I suppose video assistant referee is just the position, isn't it? It's just the bloke.
So Hawkeye, just so I don't get this wrong, is if the ball moves over the line or not in the goal.
That's when they do that whole thing, yeah.
Right.
Because that was used in the match.
Okay.
And so, it was awarded a goal.
Yeah, VAR can see that as well, apparently.
Mm-hmm. Okay, cool.
So, yeah, I imagine it's part of the same shebang.
But then obviously it wasn't called on, because in that same match as well, spoilers, the first minute red card for a blatant handball in the penalty area.
Aha.
And the ref, I suppose, in that instance could have called on VAR,
yep,
because the player was like, oh, hit my chest.
Yeah.
But the ref just gave him a red card straight away.
Yes.
Yeah.
This is partly, though, this is the issue with football, is that football is such a grey area sport. So much of it is about intent.
Mm.
And so you're saying that it was, all right, I may reveal again my ignorance here,
right,
but he said that he was saying it hit his chest rather than his arm.
He didn't want to get sent off in his first minute of a World Cup, so he's going to say anything.
Of course. Yeah. But if it hits your arm, even if it does hit your arm, if it was accidental, right, you're like looking the other way, there wasn't enough time to move out of the way, then you're
this
okay,
is the thing, because
right?
Slow
isn't
motion...
Isn't like ball to arm or...
Yeah,
like,
yeah. But also the problem with slow-mo replay sometimes is that everything looks deliberate when you slow it down.
Yeah.
You can't sort of judge it in the correct way.
That's true.
But it wasn't. It was a red card.
And that deliberate stuff
definitely
is worse
deliberate
than...
Yeah.
But how can you know that unless you know inside the person?
Yeah, you only really know in full time. And you're,
let's
and it
dig
is,
into that point.
What I don't like is it takes away the gut decision of the referee. And for the number of times that a decision is overturned by VAR, which I do agree with, there's also, I think the problem is that there's so many sort of armchair pundits and real pundits now in sport who will just argue that the referee got it wrong just because, I don't know, they support the team or they don't like the ref or whatever.
Or it makes for good television.
Exactly, yeah. But a lot of the skill in football is around the ref trying to actually diffuse situations like that. And I think largely, controversial statement, they get a really bad time.
Yeah.
Because it's a horrible thing to have to do. So VAR helps, I think.
Yeah, there's been some... part of the other reason people are worried about it is after a goal has been scored, people want to keep that very sort of natural reaction of the goal scorer where he wheels away and celebrates. If he scores a goal, then all 22 players on the pitch turn around and stare at a screen.
Ugh, I think everyone's just being too picky.
Yeah. I think the players would rather have the goal than have it disallowed.
Yes.
They've robbed my celebration from me. Well, you won the game, so shut up.
That is pretty much. So I'm really. It's all bleeding in together now. The cricket, but
no, it's fine.
That
in
has
fact,
survived.
I was about to say actually, yeah.
That was a thing that you'd get a wicket. And in the olden days, as soon as the finger goes up, so to speak, everybody goes crazy. But now there's a small element of, ooh, will the batsman review? But it's still, they still celebrate. Then there's another celebration after the lack of review or the review goes your way. And then it's a very exciting moment when it's on the screen and the rest of it. So it's all survived, yeah. the excitement.
Wait, so they have a certain amount of chances to review and then...
They're 15 seconds.
Oh, yeah, and then... Wait, so and then they have like, oh, you can review three per...
It varies between competition. We really are just talking about cricket now.
Yeah.
And it's interesting because in the game very recently where Scotland beat England, spoiler alert, very great result actually for cricket generally. But they tried to review. Scotland tried to review at one point, and he said no, you didn't do it in time, and it was like 18 seconds instead of 15 seconds, and the guy would have been out as well.
Yeah.
So they missed out, but they still beat England.
Rules
so,
is rules.
Yeah. And rules is rules. Mm. That's always been.
It's nice because rules like ooh when they do it on tennis, you know, and they play it back.
Yeah.
Hawkeye. It's quite nice.
Yeah. Cool I couldn't find a good example of Hawkeye actually sort of really impacting a major tennis tournament. It definitely impacts maybe points and important sets, but I couldn't find actually an example of when it has actually won someone a championship or anything. Like, no championships have ever been won on Hawkeye. Yeah. Matches have, but...
Yeah, that makes sense.
First used at Wimbledon in what year?
A while ago.
Have a guess.
2096
or something?
If I am not mistaken, it was 2007. Oh, first God. Time at Wimbledon.
Oh, way off.
At Wimbledon.
Wow.
When was the first time it was used in Test cricket? In this country? What do you reckon? Because obviously I've looked it up.
About 2006, something like
it was
that.
Already in 2005, wasn't it?
They didn't have it.
Wasn't it in the Ashes?
Well,
did
they? Basically.
It was. I think it was.
Right. It was not blanket, but the first time it was ever used on British television was by specifically Channel 4.
Yeah, when they did 2005 Ashes, that was great.
England versus Pakistan Test match at Lords on 21st of May 2001. Hmm. It was the first time it was ever used on British television.
It's a long time ago.
Got them both well wrong.
Yeah, but am I right in saying now, David, that largely Hawkeye is actually using cricket for LBW decisions?
Yeah, that's pretty much all. I'm trying to think of anything else it would be used.
Because in tennis, it's obvious. It's just is it out?
Yeah, because they snicker for the other thing, right? Which is the audio.
It is really good for this. Yeah, you can hear it. Did it like hit the bat or whatever before it got caught?
Yeah.
So
good.
What do you think about the introduction of? Because football, everyone always has such a hoo-ha about technology in football, but seemingly, to the untrained eye, tennis and cricket have sort of taken it on, and it's a positive thing for the game.
Mm. Yeah, I think I'm wholly in favour of it.
Yeah,
there's been a few times when it's been turned off, effectively. Like the what are they called, the BCCI, is that the right acronym? The Indian Cricket Board have historically been quite anti. Hawkeye and anti-DRS. Partly it's like lots of political stuff in it, but also they don't really trust it. It hasn't always been 100%. Mm. There was a test series where England were playing India and they refused to have it in that series. And it felt really weird. We got so used to the idea of, is that an accurate call? Is that going to get checked? And the fun of it, actually, I genuinely think it's quite fun the way they use the technology.
Yeah, because then, and also after the match, you can see, I mean, it's not the same technology, but it's like similar. You can see like where all the balls have like hit whatever. And it's just like...
The pitch map.
Yeah, like getting excited about the data and how you can...
Talk about data in cricket.
That's another hypocrisy about football fans who love stuff like heat maps and touch maps, and then as soon as it's like, if you actually have this technology, your team could win more often, they'd be like, no.
Yeah, it's
magic of the game.
Maybe in a while, after it's been like implemented for a while.
I think it's because, because there's so many football leagues, and unfortunately for people who don't like it, I do, but I know some people don't, it is the most popular sport in the world.
Yeah.
And it's always going to have like such a magnifying glass over its use. I did not know that it's regularly used in Gaelic football, badminton and hurling.
Sure.
So, you can see badminton, it would work.
What's Gaelic football?
Oh, it's a bit like, is it the one that's a bit like lacrosse? But it's really violent.
I was going to say, is it the one where you can like punch people?
Yeah. I went into a pub in North London to try and watch an Arsenal match once, and they were exclusively only showing the Gaelic football.
Wow.
And I trust that you went along with that decision.
I didn't know what was going on.
Excuse me, this is not the Gunners. Put association football on, please.
So I suppose the other thing around the technology is the rules that are then implemented by the sporting bodies. Because like you were sort of saying, in cricket, you have to do it within 15 seconds. In tennis, you get three queries per set and an extra one if it's a tie break.
Yeah.
So I suppose you have to cap it somehow, otherwise players...
That's what adds to the excitement, though. The fact they only have like three, or they're on the third one. Oh, my gosh. Are they going to use it? They're using it. Like,
well, England are playing Australia at cricket as we speak, and I've followed it on my phone, like the professional I am. Australia burn... They only get one review in this form of cricket. Australia burn their review very early on. Mm. So we now know that for the whole of the rest of England's innings, Australia can be like, ugh. You know, I missed that one.
Interesting.
There was a very famous situation in the Ashes a few years back when it was quite new at that point, it feels like. Maybe it wasn't, because all my guesses were wrong. But England played Australia, and Australia were using their reviews tactically. They were going through this phase where they were like, well, we'd just try out some really weird ones. We, like, couldn't get them out. It looks like a bit of a long shot, but let's give it a try. You know, might get a wicket. And they'd used them all up. And then Stuart Broad came in and nicked it to the wicketkeeper, although they've since now claimed he nicked it to second slip, but actually the wicketkeeper fumbled it and it went to second slip. Just a small thing. I just like to be accurate about these things. Anyway, he wasn't given out, and Australia couldn't review because they'd used up all their reviews. And then they vilified Stuart Broad and called him a cheat for not walking, which is absolutely ridiculous. Right. But it was a really fun aspect of it that England, on the other hand, had been very cautious with their reviews and saved them for the howlers. That's what they always say it's meant to be for. Australia had been trying to game the system, thinking, oh, maybe we'll get him out, nick him out here, just use them all up. And they couldn't get him out when he was
blatantly out.
I don't know.
So is that because the Australians just thought that there might be a flaw in the technology?
They thought maybe that they could get a 50-50 call somewhere.
Yeah.
Right. Because this is the thing about the technology as well. It has to be completely trusted.
Yeah, I think it wasn't so much the trust aspect. It was just that at that point, people were still trying to work out tactically what the best way to use the review system was in cricket, whether you should use it in the intended way, i.e. you're sure that you got it wrong and then you use it. But they weren't. They were sort of using it in a tactical way. Like, they wanted to make sure they used... Exactly, that's the word I've been looking for. They didn't want to leave any reviews unused. And they were like, well, let's
and kind of just
sort
of trying to disrupt the flow of a team who's doing well as well.
Mm. They can be an aspect.
Because sometimes that happens in tennis. They just call it when they know it's in, just to get a breather or something.
Oh, really?
And,
That's the sort of tactical element that it adds is actually quite interesting. It maybe wasn't sort of intended at the start. But how many did you get in cricket? Is it per over?
It's per innings. In ODIs, that's the 50-over game, you get one per innings.
Okay.
In tests, you get two per innings. It used to be that they got topped up at the end of 80 overs. This is going to be so boring for anyone that doesn't like cricket.
It gets
topped up at the
spicy
end of 80 overs, but they've changed it very controversially.
Sexy.
So that it doesn't get topped up. but if it's umpire's call... Actually, this is a whole... Oh, God, I find this stuff so interesting and it's so dull. They build in this stuff about umpire's call. On LBWs, if the ball tracking technology says, oh, maybe it was in, maybe it was out, then we call that umpire's call and we just go with whatever the umpire said. And it's blatantly a rule that was brought in to preserve the umpire's authority and to say, no, whatever you said, that's fine. Even though the technology is so accurate that it really could work it out. But they're like, oh, well, it's within a certain margin of error. But the rule is, if it's within that margin for error, you now don't lose your review, which actually encourages people to go for the reviews on the close calls, which is not the idea. It's meant to be for mistakes.
Mm. Yeah, which I think is probably positive that rugby and now football are leaving this up to the officials to decide when to use the technology, because football would be an absolute nightmare if the players were allowed to make those calls.
I don't agree. I think that would be good.
You reckon?
Because they wouldn't,
they wouldn't be as
bolshy. They wouldn't use them all the time.
They'd use them on like offside calls and stuff. And
yeah, and then they'd be gone. And they'd soon learn. It always shakes out after a while. They learn what the best way to do it is.
I prefer it the other way around, because players are always saying that the referee got a decision wrong. Like today, the Japanese goalkeeper spilt it blatantly right over the line off a free kick, and he was wagging his finger at the referee like, no, you're wrong.
Yeah, well, then let him put his money where his mouth is.
Yeah, but then they did. They used the review, and it was in, and so he has to just shut up now.
Yeah.
That's what happened.
Oh, I see what you mean.
I'm saying that the referee gets to reinstate his authority over the game.
But he's still going to wag his finger on all these other occasions, which weren't even close. But if he had to put his review at stake, he would have to shut up, wouldn't he? I think.
Well, we don't know. Let's have a little drum roll, and then we'll come back and talk about cars.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
VAR is only one letter different to the word car. Christina, you love a bit of F1.
I do, yeah.
So, I mean, F1, it's in cars, so it has to include tech. Yeah. What is the most interesting tech being used in Formula 1 at the moment?
To be honest, it is obviously unbelievably different to the other sports we've mentioned. And it's in every aspect, you know, within the car, within like the NASA-style control like center they have within the pit. Yeah, you know, within the car, there's about 200 sensors in each car. Although the FIA, which is just the governing body, basically, has actually capped real-time telemetry. So it does sort of limit it. But after the race...
What, four teams?
Yeah, so the race, you can obviously like massively like analyse that. Although having to analyse like 65 billion data points is not exactly going to be exactly a light job. Mm. But, you know, the FIA also hasn't got any regulation on how many data scientists you can have. So, the wealthier team can employ, aka... You know, Mercedes can employ as many data scientists as they want. Speaking about wealthier teams, well, Mercedes also like creates the engines and sells them to. I can't remember what other teams have them, but a few have Mercedes engines, and they get all the data from that.
Right.
But anyway, looking at specific technology, one of them which is quite interesting, which launched in 2009, is KERS, or K-E-R-S.
KERS.
So that's, kinetic energy recapture system. So, I mean, obviously, if you drive, you'll know that these are driving at like 200 miles an hour, and then you brake before a corner, you're going to lose a lot of kinetic energy. So the idea with this bit of technology is that it can be stored, I think about 60 kilowatts of energy can be stored, and then sort of pushed back in, like refiltered through into the car.
Right.
Sort of creating a slight hybrid style, so that's pretty good and pretty useful.
There's also DRS, which is used.
Yeah, DRS is really popular. It can only be used on certain parts of the track, so on straights, basically. Basically, the cars are built so that you can still accelerate around corners at high speeds and you're stable. And DRS is just... drag reduction system, sorry. It basically means that when you're on a straight, you can regain some seconds by opening a flap, like on the rear left or something.
Yeah, it's on the rear wing flap.
Yeah, and then that will mean...
I love the rear wing flap.
He's been really technical. I'm really, really blasé about it. Some flap open, and then you can go faster. So, you're obviously not, like, loads faster, but if there is... I mean, between cars, there's normally, like, you know, 10...
Yeah.
Tenths of seconds. So.
It just gives you a little bit more speed to actually make a safe pass.
Exactly, yeah. So, I mean, on certain tracks, you wouldn't even... You know, city tracks, you wouldn't even really get to use that because they're so tight anyway. There's no space to overtake. That's why, like, the technology you guys are describing in terms of, like, match decisions technology to use that, it wouldn't really work on F1 because there isn't normally, like, nose-to-nose cars going across the finish line. But, yeah, so DRS...
That must happen sometimes, though.
Horse racing.
Oh, no, but, I mean, nature's genuinely, cars.
genuinely, the original vehicle.
Has that never happened in like a Formula One?
I don't know if it's never happened. I imagine it will have done, but never, like, a photo really thing. They're...
Well, they know lap times because of... tech.
Yeah, true.
So like
yeah.
you wouldn't use cameras.
Yeah, you wouldn't need cameras. It would automatically like say if it was that close. But generally they're not that close. No. I mean they're close in terms of like still less than a second, yeah. But not enough that, you know, they go through at the same time. There was actually a bit of tech that got banned. I think it was used in the '90s, putting it out there. Not
banned
too sure.
Before the 1994 season.
There we go. You're all about the facts, all of it.
He's on it.
He's good. Basically, so it's active suspension.
Yeah.
And the idea was that the suspension system sort of fed loads and loads of data about the conditions of the road, and then it could make it could sort of adjust the suspension to match.
Yeah. It was used in
no, go on.
Alan Prost's championship-winning car in 1993.
The Professor.
The Professor, yeah.
Yes.
But there's always the argument now is that like he wasn't actually technically as brilliant as some of the other drivers, but he had a car
exactly.
that was massively technologically
and
better.
And that's like what people say when they're talking about F1. They're always yeah. like, oh, is it the driver or is it the car?
Well, that's the big debate.
Yeah.
But in this instance, it was judged to have been
yeah.
the car.
It was the car in this yeah. instance, yeah.
How would you feel about them replacing the human drivers with amazing robots?
Different, maybe in a different
yeah,
sport.
Different sport. I think I'd like to watch that.
That was an incredible segue. I enjoyed that one.
I just think that would be amazing.
That would be good.
And then they'd be playing cricket at the same time. It's just
yeah.
perfect.
Yeah, what about robot cricket, though?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It was the magic of the game.
I don't approve that message.
No.
But you wouldn't have to worry about danger, because...
No, but, oh, God, that's classic David taking away the danger.
Mr. Health and Safety.
Mr. Health and Safety. That's my wrestler name.
but yeah, it got banned. Yeah,
so sort of talk of bringing it back.
Yeah, they are talking about bringing it back. Yeah, well, they were talking about bringing it back for 2018's Grand Prix, but it's not been brought back. So maybe next year's.
Maybe.
But yeah, I think the tech is quite a lot of the tech is sort of behind the scenes and unbelievably complex. But those sort of like the standout ones that you can see like quite like impact quite a lot.
It's always a bit of a. Difficult debate with F1 as well, because obviously, yeah, back in the 50s, it was just blokes in cars, get in the car, and then if he doesn't crash, you can chat to him at the end about how it went. No radios or anything, but because so many people died, technology was brought in to make it safer, and now it's perceived as a competitive advantage because there's so much money in the sport. But really, if you take half of this technology away, it's actually a lot unsafer.
Yeah.
Radios, cameras in the cars.
Yeah, so many sensors, though. For example, I think it was a couple of years back, there was Mercedes were telling Lewis Hamilton while he was out, oh, you need to, they'll be in box, you need to pit, you need to come into the pit. And he's like, why? There's nothing wrong, the car's fine. Like, and obviously, Lewis Hamilton doesn't want to go into the pit, it's going to lose him seconds.
Yeah.
And they were like, no, come in, you've got a puncture. And he was like, it feels fine. And then he did have a puncture. Mm-hmm. So, like, you need that data to know, because that's not safe. And you need the technology there to be able to... detect something before the driver knows.
Mm.
So it's just that added element of safety there as well.
But then, I'm not sure, but then is that going back to my point that some people would say that that's given them a competitive advantage?
Yeah, and you know, Mercedes is Mercedes and Ferrari, Red Bull actually now are like the most wealthy teams, and it does seem kind of harsh on the less wealthy teams because they can have like the better engines, and they, for example, if they are using Mercedes engines, they can see all their data, and that gives them another sort of strategic advantage over them. So, and you know, you see Bottas, he came from Williams, which is actually struggling this season, and now he's in Mercedes, and you can see that he, in my opinion, is not the best driver in
he's
a
not.
Really good car.
Yeah.
And it's kind of annoying because you're like, you shouldn't be there. Someone who is better, I mean, he'll never do it, but Ricciardo in a Mercedes would be absolutely phenomenal, because it is a really good driver in a really good car, whereas it did sort of show Bottas not the best driver
doesn't
in a really good car,
really,
and now he's doing well.
It doesn't really happen in Formula 1 anymore. They don't really put two
no,
genuinely
they want
title.
A one and a two. They don't want the competitive aspect. It's really annoying.
Can't be arsed with it.
Yeah, that is one of the things that's annoying to me. For example, like my boyfriend is a Mercedes fan and he's a Lewis Hamilton fan, but he will support Bottas so much, and it's just like, you're annoying me because you only want that. So Mercedes have got 1-2. It's not because you want the better driver to come through. So
Because you went to the British Grand Prix last year.
Yeah, I went with Mercedes last year. Yeah.
And you have interviewed William CTO, have you not?
Yeah, CIO Graham Hackland.
CIO,
yeah.
my bad. Because he was talking a lot about the big data, right, and how it's used.
Yeah, and to be fair, Williams has got some really interesting stuff going on. They all do, obviously. But yeah, it's Graham Hackland's really, really interesting guy, actually. And it's just sort of hard to comprehend how much insight they can get from data, but how difficult it is to get that insight.
Right.
And it's basically sort of like the data race. Like, they're all trying to race to get the as much insight as possible. And it's essentially, like, it's, I don't know, it seems too big for any team,
yeah.
Really. Mercedes are winning, though.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you guys follow motorsport or any implementation of technology in vehicle?
Yeah, I like Formula One. I don't follow it as much as I used to, but it's the way that money's changing it is, I mean, kind of unavoidable, I guess, because it's such an expensive sport to sort of run anyway. But just the fact that the wealthier teams do just tend to do better because they just have more resources throughout
it's
the car.
Same in football.
Yeah, I think what's the other motorsport where they give everyone the same car? Exactly, as Formula something. Am I making this up? You're all looking at me like I'm nuts.
It's just that's my ignorance, not yours.
Let's just say Formula E.
Formula E. Why not? And then also
that's electric cars.
Yeah. There was also Bernie a while ago who was talking about randomly throwing water onto the track in the middle of Bernie Ecclestone.
Oh, he's an idiot.
What an idea! It's people throwing buckets of water across the track as people are driving past, and simulating rain.
Oh, can have the water sponsored.
Machiavellian. Yeah,
that's it. Yeah. Evian water break.
Evian, yeah.
Change diet.
They're really trying hard, though, to sort of like debunk that sort of myth that there's a favourite team. Because sometimes it does, you know, you think, oh, that team's just doing so well. Like, they're not having any of the breakdowns that this other team's having. And I know there was with the tyres, Pirelli tyres, they used to just hand them out. And then to the teams.
Like candy.
And then they were saying, oh, well, are they getting better tyres on that team? Are they giving them a little bit of money? Are they getting worse tyres on that team? Because they've not got enough money to give them a bribe. I mean, not saying that they have. But so then they started doing, well, they've got to go collect the tyres from like a random selection of tyres. So, yeah.
Nice.
Right.
So they're trying to get rid of that sort of aspect.
Okay. Yeah, I don't know why Formula 1... Well, I do know why it gets such a such a bad rep for the sort of inclusion of money and technology in sport. But it's one of those things where I think it's... inherent secretive nature is under more scrutiny than any other sport. I was like, well, why can't you tell us this? I was like, well, if we tell you, then everyone knows. And then, like you don't tell the opposition's manager before a football match exactly how you're going to set up and what minute you're going to make subs in.
But that's why a couple of years ago they disallowed you to speak to the driver about anything other than. Like, it couldn't be a technical issue. It could only be, like, if you need to pit or anything to do, like, something around, like, changing your tyres or whatever.
Yeah.
And then I know David Coulthard was massively against this because it meant that...
Because he loves a NASA.
Yeah, he loves it, yeah. And Lewis Hamilton, for example, was, like, stuck on, like, I don't know, gear 18, level 7, mode 6. And it was, like, they couldn't tell him that he needed to be in... gear 6 mode 19 and level 2.
Yeah, I remember that. Do you know what I mean? Like, that's
what it's like. Exactly. So he doesn't know either. He's the driver, and he on his
steering wheel.
There's all these buttons and stuff, and like maybe he only needs to move from one mode to another, and it means pressing one button. But they weren't allowed to tell him that.
He was like, what mode?
He's just losing power. Yeah, he's like, I'm losing power, and it's just like, you know, we're not allowed. He was quite heated, wasn't he? He's like, you know, we're not allowed to say it. I think they brought it back now. I think they're all right. I think.
That seems stupid.
Yeah, I think that seems stupid. And they were like, oh no, it's because it gives people an unfair advantage. It's like, no, it really doesn't. Like, I think that's fine.
Yeah, if it's a
team
effort.
If they're all doing it, if all the cars are getting that information, it's fine.
Yeah, also if it's a team effort, you think that the team and the driver should be able to communicate about almost anything they like? I mean,
It's all public, isn't it? I find that quite interesting. When you're talking to Mo on the radio, we can all hear it.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's and also the fact, though, because that has to be audited by the broadcaster. That's never live, because when they swear they beep it out, and that's just actually, I know it looks cool, like it was like it's live radio, but it's just another thing to make you feel like
the illusion shattered
when I was there. I was in,
because they just handpick the most exciting things to show the listener and then beep out.
But at least in theory it's all getting heard by somebody.
Yes.
So if they were doing
it's not secret.
I was in the pit when I went with Mercedes, and like, you know, the people you see at the back with the headphones on. Yeah. I was there, and then, but you could hear literally every single person's radio, and it was like, the whole time, and I was just like, I'm scared. Like, it was just too many people talking at once. I was like, I can't deal with this. But then you take the headphones off, and all you hear is like, you're like, I'll put them on, I'll put them back on. It's quite a stressful environment.
What about cycling?
Ooh.
Because that seems like one where there's a bit too much technology.
What technology is in cycling? I don't know anything about it.
Oh, yeah, I suppose there is pharmaceutical technology. But there's what do they call it? Mechanical doping. So they're all,
is
in
that
theory.
Robots on bikes?
Oil.
What?
Is that robots on bikes?
No.
Is it oil on your chain?
No, it's when the bike is partly motorised. It's like the most, most mind-blowing thing.
Really?
They're cycling along, and there's a little engine somewhere, and it's like helping them along.
What? I didn't know that was a thing.
Isn't that the maddest thing you've ever imagined? Yeah, you know, I feel like cycling is going a bit too far, because the bikes cost thousands and thousands of pounds. And, you know, just get a bike. They should all just have the same bikes. They should just hand them out like a kid's party or whatever. You know, here's the seven bikes.
Well, like when you go go-karting and one person's is obviously way better than everyone else's.
Yeah, that's always fun.
Mine's always terrible, obviously. That's why I come last.
At Laser Quest, I always get the vest, the gun rather, that doesn't work.
I bet you get the vest that doesn't work. Yeah. Yeah, that'd be why I couldn't ever shoot you.
Here we go every week, don't we, David?
Laser tag Tuesdays,
I love it.
We should do that.
We should actually write that down.
Let's not do that. So I was going to say, yeah, I mean, cycling's a good example, but before we wrap up, are there any other sports that you would like to see less tech in or more tech in? Because I know we are inclined to support the technological side of things, but we haven't entirely said that it's a good thing.
I think that, I mean,
I think it's a good thing, actually.
Yeah, I mean, particularly for something on the scale of the World Cup with football, for example. I mean, again, England versus Germany, 2010, Frank Lampard's goal. Clearly in. Everyone in the stadium knew it was in.
Let it go.
Yeah, I'm not hung up on this. Back off. But, you know, if the goal's clearly in and they can show a replay where it's clearly in, then what are you doing? What do you mean it's not allowed? What's going on?
But it's been necessary for the technology to catch up with the ideal, though, because, I mean, people will still debate today whether or not Jeff Hurst's hat-trick goal went in the World Cup.
Azerbaijani linesman.
Yeah,
very generous.
But because the replays there are in black and white, and it's, you can't tell, it's so blurry, like,
it's
probably
ironic,
went
isn't
in
it? They're in black and white, but you can't tell.
And that's a good,
that's
note
really
to
deep.
All right, so there's two there's two different kinds of technology, and there's technologies like we were mostly talking about where it's like working out if something is right or not. I like that.
Yeah,
you know, getting the correct interpretation of the rules. But what I don't like is technology making people better at things.
So you don't like Formula One?
Yeah, you wouldn't like that.
I kind of don't. But like, coming back to cricket, there's the modern bats you have where the sweet spot is much bigger and people can hit it further.
Yeah.
And these technologies only ever seem to benefit the batsman, by the way, in cricket. And they're now going to get virtual reality headsets so they can get prepared before they come out to bat so they can visualise the bowler and all this sort of thing.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't like the idea of it taking away from the skill that's required by the participant.
I think cricket's got a good balance, though, actually.
Cricket's brilliant.
Yeah.
Oh, God. But then also, I mean, ignoring his other crime, what about Oscar Pistorius? let's put that to one side. But then the fact that he...
I think he'd like us to do that.
No, technology allowed him to compete at the same level as people with actual legs.
Beyond, well beyond.
Yeah,
so that you're in favour of that, less in favour of his second most famous deed.
You seem to have manoeuvred me into a place where I have to...
That was well manoeuvred.
But yes, but like, that's technically, given him a competitive advantage.
Well, see, what I wouldn't like,
because he's rich.
Maybe this is true. I don't know a lot about Paralympic events, I'm afraid. But if there were multiple people with the same disability and they had different standards of prosthetic, and meant that some of them were just faster than the others because they had better sponsors, then that's a bit crap, isn't it?
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
That's a whole other debate, isn't it?
I don't like that.
And
that's kind of like Formula One in terms of money, isn't it? Yeah.
The number of times I've said the word cricket today is ridiculous.
Really fast wheelchair.
Yeah.
The ideal of cricket is some kid on the streets of Calcutta picking up an old bat and then whacking a ball. And it should be that simple at grassroots. And once you get to that level where you have to have a particular piece of equipment to compete, it gets a bit sad, in my opinion. But there you go.
Well,
aww.
Still a bit of debate there. Japan just beat Colombia. And that third goal of the match did not require any technology. So sport's the real winner.
Yay.
Sports.
Thank you all. That was good. We should be back next week. We're approaching episode 100, so get your ideas on a postcard for whatever we're going to...
We can have champagne.
Just kept ratted.
Yes.
Did you do that one?
I had five glasses before a podcast on, so it was nice.
Bloody hell, really?
Yeah, it was like 11 o'clock as well.
Charlotte G was in that one. She was absolutely hammered.
That's when I threatened to murder our editorial director.
With my big hands,
yeah.
Murder hands.
Big
hands is a competitive advantage in the sphere.
That is
true.
The sphere
that's
of murder.
Oh my gosh, yeah.
Yeah.
That's why I'm so good at it.
The body.
Leverage.
Yeah.
Thanks for joining, everyone. see you again next week. Enjoy the World Cup. Thanks, everyone.
UK Tech Weekly Podcast.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.